Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is part two of the Pantograph. My name is Kayla Verhoeven. Today is April the 30th of 2026, and we're going to go ahead and start out with a man facing cannabis firearm and possession charges. Crime in court spotlights. Bloomington man jailed on cannabis and firearm possession charges by Caitlin Klepek 22 hours ago. Bloomington. A man from Bloomington, accused of drug and firearm offenses, have been detained in McLean County. Fred B. Mitchell, 37, appeared Tuesday afternoon before Judge Amy McFarland for his initial appearance. He faces the following charges. Unlawful possession of a firearm by a repeat felony offender, which is a Class X felony, armed violence, a Class X felony, two counts of unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, Class 2 felonies, possession of a firearm with a defaced serial number, a Class 3 felony, violation of the Illinois Firearm Owners Identification Card Act, a Class 3 felony, unlawful possession of cannabis with intent to deliver, a Class 3 felony. The prosecution, represented by Assistant State's Attorney Jeffrey Arbaugh, filed a petition to detain the defendant. However, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said his client wished to concede with the detention. McFarland asked the state to present its probable cause statement anyway. Arbaugh said the charges stem from an Illinois State Police Task Force 6 investigation involving cannabis, which was being shipped from out of state to a Bloomington residence. A package was intercepted by the United States Postal Service in Champaign on April the 23rd, he said. The package was sent 2 days prior from Las Vegas and was addressed to a home in the 600 block of North Oak Street. The package was addressed to Bernard Mitchell, Arbaugh said, and the tracking number associated with the package linked back to the defendant's name and his IP address was used to view where the shipment was at. Police received a federal search warrant to open the package and found a teddy bear with a larger, clear plastic vacuum-sealed baggie concealed inside of it, Arbaugh said. Inside the baggie, 120.9 grams of cannabis was found, which is more than four times the legal possession limit, the prosecutor noted. A U.S. postal inspector then delivered the package to Oak Street residents on April the 27th. The inspector was able to positively identify Mitchell as the person who retrieved the package, Arbaugh said. Police then executed a search warrant at the residence and located a 9mm firearm with a defaced serial number hidden in a speaker in the defendant's bedroom, he said. The firearm was loaded with five live rounds of ammunition, one of which was inside the chamber, Arbaugh said. In speaking with the police, Mitchell at first said he didn't have a middle name and that it started with B, but he wouldn't admit it was Bernard, Arbaugh said. As a convicted felon, Mitchell cannot legally possess a firearm. He was scheduled for an arraignment at 9 a.m. on May the 22nd. In other crime and courts news, we have a spotlight. A Bloomington man was sentenced to 6.5 years for cocaine possession. By Caitlin Klepek, April the 29th of 2026. Bloomington, a 65-year-old man, has been sentenced to 6.5 years in prison after he pleaded guilty to a cocaine offense. Frederick Childs of Bloomington was sentenced Monday by Judge Jason Chambers following his guilty plea. Originally, Childs was charged with unlawful possession of a controlled substance with intent to deliver 1 to 15 grams of cocaine, a Class 1 felony. Unlawful possession of a controlled substance with less than 15 grams of a substance containing heroin, a Class 4 felony, and domestic battery, a Class A misdemeanor. The charges came about in November of 2024 when police were dispatched to a Bloomington gas station after a report of a man striking a woman inside of a parked vehicle. After searching the suspect, police found 13.4 grams of cocaine on him, according to prosecution statements made at his initial appearance hearing. After he pleaded guilty to the Class 1 felony in February, the prosecution, represented by Assistant State's Attorney Jeffrey Horv, in the case, dismissed Child's remaining charges. Childs was represented by attorney Joseph Moran. He will be required to serve at least 50% of the sentence, for which he has earned 543 days credit for time served in jail. After prison, Childs will have to complete 1 year of mandatory supervised release. In an education spotlight, Heartland to offer free summer art course for veterans in Lincoln, by Matus Janik, 4 hours ago. Lincoln. Heartland Community College in Lincoln will offer a free summer art program for veterans through a partnership with Credit Vets. The course, aimed at beginner and intermediate artists, will be held off of the campus at Hope of Fifth, 200 Fifth Street in Lincoln. Sessions are scheduled from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., Wednesdays, June the 3rd through July 22nd. Tuition and all course expenses will be covered for student veterans through the partnership. The Create Credit Vets program uses art as a form of expression. The program is not only open to veterans, but also to their caregivers and spouses. Heartland first introduced Credit Vets in the fall of 2025 at its campus in Normal. Credit Vets Executive Director Richard Casper attended Heartland Community College from 2007 to 2009 and has earned an Associate in Arts degree. He is a U.S. Marine veteran, Purple Heart recipient, artist, and entrepreneur. Casper co-founded Credit Vets to provide art, music, and writing programs for combat veterans dealing with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injuries. Heartland nominated Casper for the 2021 Illinois Community College Trustees Association Distinguished Alumni Award, which he received that year. Anyone interested in learning more about the course can contact Jerry Andrew at jerry.andrew@heartland.edu or at 309-268-8872. Once again, anyone interested in learning more about the course can contact Jerry Andrew at jerry.andrew@heartland.edu or at 309-268-8872. Moving on now to government and politics spotlight, Trump to be featured in new U.S. Passport for America's 250th, by Kathleen Wong, USA Today, on April the 29th, 2026, updated 4 hours ago. To commemorate America's 250th anniversary this summer, Americans can receive a limited edition U.S. passport with President Trump's portrait on it. The U.S. State Department confirmed special passport designs to USA Today after it was first reported by Fox News. As the United States celebrates America's 250th anniversary in July, the State Department is preparing to release a limited number of specially designed U.S. passports to commemorate this historic occasion, State Department spokesperson Tommy Pigott said. These passports will feature customized artwork and enhanced imagery while maintaining the same security features that make the U.S. passport the most secure document in the world, Pigott continued. According to mock-ups shared by the agency, the inside cover will feature President Donald Trump and his signature with the Declaration of Independence. A different page will have the scene of the Founding Fathers signing the 1776 document. Both pages have a background of the American flag. The back cover will feature a rendering of the flag with 250 centered within a 13-star circle. How to get a passport featuring President Trump. The anniversary passports will be available only at the Washington Passport Agency for American citizens who apply for a new identification document until the supplies run out, according to the State Department. The agency did not state how many of the special edition passports will be released. There is no extra fee to get one with the new design. The expected release date is in July to correspond with Trump's other 250th anniversary celebrations, such as a 16-day transformation of the National Mall into the Great American State Fair with livestock competitions and rodeo events. The specially designed passport won't be the default version issued to everyone, and it will only be available while the supplies last. Moving on to coinciding government and politics top story spotlights. Normal launches the Route 66 Centennial merchandise store and plans picnic by Matus Janique 23 hours ago. Normal. The town of Normal has launched an online store selling commemorative Route 66 merchandise as part of its broader celebration of the highway's 100th anniversary. The store features items branded with the town's Route 66 Centennial logo, which depicts Abraham Lincoln standing beside a Rivian R1T. Cultural Arts Director Beth Wisman said in a statement the design is meant to honor 100 years of adventure on the road, while reflecting both historic legacies of Route 66 and Normal's present-day identities. The store's opening aligns with two upcoming events tied to the centennial. The Illinois Route 66 Red Carpet Corridor Festival is scheduled for May 1st through the 3rd, and the National Route 66 Centennial Kickoff Celebration will be April the 30th. People across the country, around the world, are celebrating Route 66, Wisman said in the statement. Normal is excited to welcome visitors from near and far to honor the legacy of this historic highway. The online on-demand store is being offered through a partnership with locally operated CM Promotions. Merchandise includes apparel and accessories along with retro-style items such as diner mugs and Stanley vacuum-insulated bottles. The Centennial logo will also appear on merchandise and giveaway items connected to other Route 66-related events in Normal, including the town's retro roadside picnic from noon to 4 p.m. on June the 7th at 1 Normal Plaza. The picnic is part of a countrywide celebration event along McLean County's stretch of Route 66. The town said it worked with Rivian, the electric vehicle maker, with its production plant in Normal, and local designer and illustrator Mike Mile to create the Centennial logo. Wisdom said in the statement, the design was intended to blend the spirit of Route 66 past with the town's present and future. Rivian has also made an impact on our community, and we were thrilled when they joined our effort, Wisdom said in the statement. The logo reflects the legacy of the past, the vibrancy of the present, and the promise of the future. In other news, ISU strikers visit the Capitol. AFSCME frustrated over the lack of talks and three-week walkout by Ben Zielinski, Capitol News, Illinois, 4 hours ago. In Springfield, non-teaching staff at Illinois State University have been on strike now for 3 weeks and are growing frustrated at the lack of negotiations between the unions and administrators. The maintenance, building, and ground service workers, who are represented by AFSCME Council 31, have been on strike since April the 8th, demanding higher pay. As a result, students at the campus in Normal have dealt with dirty bathrooms, garbage piling up, and limited dining options. On Tuesday, a group of striking workers traveled to the Capitol in Springfield to call attention to the strike, which has become an issue in the governor's race. Without us, I know they're not getting the quality of cleaning that they deserve, building worker Sue Perry told reporters at a news conference in Springfield. Little progress has been made in negotiations since January, according to Renee Nessler, AFSCME's staff representative. That's when the university put forward its latest offer, which also says its final offer. ISU has offered staff members a plan that would grant a 3.5% raise with the new contract is ratified, bringing hourly wages to $21.34 on average for dining hall employees and $22.78 for building services employees, the two largest groups of workers in the union. Workers would be slated for a 3% annual raise every July 1st through 2029. But the union says the lack of retroactive pay, since workers did not receive a raise last July, is a major problem. They are seeking a 3.5% wage increase retroactive to the beginning of the fiscal year last summer, along with certainty that staff members will be a part of the campus wage program. The program would allow staff members to receive a greater wage increase when their management receives an increase above the yearly standard. Union leaders and negotiations over the last 4 months have been unproductive, and no future bargaining sessions are scheduled. We know the community values us every day, brings an outpouring of support, the union president Chuck Carver said, a building service worker. The ones who don't value us are high up in the administration. They are ignoring our well-being of the students and damaging ISU's reputations. Lawsuit. The strike also escalated into a lawsuit against the university. The union alleges the university has hired new non-unionized workers to replace the striking workers while they're off the job. We are fighting for fair pay and dignity, and while they're saying that they can't afford it, they're paying these scab companies more than what we make, Carver said. The union president said the contract vendors are making $38 to $197 an hour compared to ISU's $16 for floor for many workers. ISU has asked courts to dismiss the case. These external companies are not strike breakers. They are well-established local businesses that perform custodial and grounds work in and around our local community every day, ISU said in a statement. Furthermore, the use of these external companies is not illegal, and we plan to vigorously defend our position in this meritless lawsuit. The university follows a state procurement process that ensures it's compliant with the law. State law prohibits hiring new workers to replace the ones on strike. Governor J.B. Pritzker told reporters in Springfield on Tuesday that both parties need to return to the bargaining table ASAP. I don't believe in strike breakers, Pritzker said. I know that's not been litigated right now, this question. You know, this should not occur. We shouldn't have people taking other people's jobs. Campaign issue. Republican nominee Darren Bailey joined ISU workers on the picket line Friday, calling on Pritzker to get more involved in resolving the strike. You can't claim to stand with workers and then disappear when it actually matters, Bailey said. You can't talk about supporting labor and then allow situations like this to drag on while families are struggling to get by. Bailey is trying to flip the narrative that Illinois Republicans are anti-union and attract a broader array of voters. This isn't about being pro-union or anti-union, Bailey said. This is about being pro-worker and pro-family. Workers need to be supported, they need to be respected, and they need to be paid in a way that allows them to actually live and not just survive. Pritzker didn't let Bailey off the hook from past statements and positions Democrats believe are anti-union, such as opposing the Workers' Rights Amendment and voting against raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. I will add that Darren Bailey, who likes to say that somehow he's standing with the workers, has never stood with the workers in this state, Pritzker said. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundations. In other government and politics, we have a top story spotlight. Bloomington votes to dissolve Consolidate Welcoming America Commission by Drew Zimmerman 21 hours ago. Bloomington. The Bloomington City Council has dissolved its Welcoming America Commission and combined its functions with the Human Relations Commission due to repeated meeting cancellations. According to the city website, the Welcoming America Commission was responsible for showcasing the vibrancy of Bloomington's international residents, as well as monitoring demographic data on the economic impact and expressed needs of immigrant residents in relation to the city's Welcoming America initiative and other programming. But over the last couple of years, the 7-member commission has been unable to get a majority of its members to attend its regular scheduled meetings. In 2024, the WAC was scheduled to meet 8 times. However, 6 of these meetings were canceled ahead of time because city staff's liaison was made aware that a quorum would not be present. Another meeting could not be held, because of a lack of quorum, and only one meeting had been held. In 2025, 13 meetings of the WAC were scheduled, but 11 were not held for lack of quorum. During Monday's council meeting, Alderman Jenna Kearns requested a pull of the ordinance to dissolve the Welcoming America Commission from the consent agenda, which contains items expected to be approved without discussion. Kearns wanted to discuss the possibility of tabling it to learn more about the purpose of the two commissions and what efforts the city has made to find additional candidates. However, Bloomington Mayor Dan Brady said the city owes it to its residents to make commissions as efficient as possible. He added that he was recently approached by the Human Relations Commission because of their desire to do more to help the city. When he approached the Welcoming America Commission about combining the two groups, members were in support of the proposal. Once consolidated, the new Human Relations Commission would consist of 10 members instead of 7, allowing for former Welcoming America Commission members to join if interested. During the public comment period for Monday's meeting, Dave Bentland, president of the Prairie Pride Coalition Board, said more work needs to be done by the Human Relations Commission to fulfill one of its responsibilities, handling discrimination complaints. In the first 4 months of 2026, there were 3 complaints from the local LGBTQ+ community who experienced discrimination within the city limits, Bentland said. And in each case, the complainants were unaware of the commission's existence and its policies to handle such grievances. While the Human Relations Commission does great work, they need to increase the community outreach and awareness efforts before taking on additional responsibilities, Bentland said. In other national news, we have calculating an Iran war endgame. Spy agencies study how Iran would react to victory declaration by Aaron Banco and Graham Slattery. 4 hours ago, U.S. intelligence agencies are studying how Iran would respond if President Donald Trump were to declare a unilateral victory in the 2-month-old war that has killed thousands and become a political liability for the White House, 2 U.S. officials and a person familiar with the matter said. The intelligence community is analyzing the question along with others at the request of senior administration officials. The goal is to understand the implications of Trump potentially pulling back from a conflict that some officials and advisors worry could contribute to deep Republican losses in the midterm elections later this year, according to the sources. While no decision has been made, and Trump could easily ramp back up military operations, a quick de-escalation could ease political pressure on the president, even as it could leave behind an emboldened Iran that could eventually rebuild its nuclear and missile programs and threaten U.S. allies in the region. The sources spoke on the condition of anonymity in order to discuss sensitive intelligence matters. It is not clear when the intelligence community would complete its work, but it's previously analyzed the likely reactions of Iran's leaders to a U.S. declaration of victory. In the days following the initial bombing campaign in February, intelligence agencies assessed that if Trump were to declare victory and the U.S. drew down its forces in the region, Iran would likely view it as a win, one of the sources said. If Trump instead said the U.S. won but maintained a heavy troop presence, Iran would likely see it as a negotiating tactic, but not one that would necessarily lead to the end of the war. CIA is not familiar with the intelligence community's reported assessments, Liz Lyons, director of the agency's Office of Public Affairs, said in a statement after the publication of this story. The CIA declined to answer specific questions about its current work on Iran. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence declined to comment. White House spokesperson Anna Kelly said the U.S. is still engaging with the Iranians on negotiations and would, quote-unquote, not be rushed into making a bad deal. The president will only enter into an agreement that puts U.S. national security first, and he has been clear that Iran can never possess a nuclear weapon, she said. Opinion polls show the war is overwhelmingly unpopular with Americans. Only 26% of respondents by a poll released last week said the military campaign was worth the costs, and only 25% said that it actually made the United States safer. Three people familiar with the White House discussions in recent days have described Trump as keenly aware of the political price being paid by him and his party. 20 days after Trump declared a ceasefire, a flurry of diplomacy have failed to fully open the economically vital Strait of Hormuz, which Tehran closed by attacking ships and laying mines in the narrow waterways, choking off the shipping that carries about 20% of the world's crude oil, has driven up energy costs worldwide and the price at U.S. gasoline pumps. Iran's ability to disrupt commerce gives it powerful leverage against the United States and its allies. A decision to scale back the U.S. military presence in the region, paired with a mutual lifting of the blockades, would eventually bring down gasoline prices. So far, however, the two sides appear very far from an agreement. The White House calls Charles Trump Two Kings by Jacob Boghossian 4 hours ago. Washington. If the ancestors of Donald Trump and King Charles could see them today, the U.S. president mused Tuesday, they would surely be filled with awe and pride that the Anglo-American Revolution and human freedom survived to the present day. Trump moments later stepped back from the lectern at the White House to shake hands with Charles during the U.S. administration's formal welcome of the U.K. royals, and the two shared a laugh. The White House captioned a photo of the moment, Two Kings. It wasn't the first time Trump has flirted with monarchical imagery in his second presidential term. In October of 25, he posted an AI-generated video depicting him wearing a crown and piloting a fighter jet zooming above No Kings protesters opposed to his administration's. Republican leaders in Congress have routinely called the demonstrations Hate America rallies. Mid-flight, Trump's character dumps fecal matter onto the gathering. The same day, he shared another AI video that showed him adoring himself with a crown, royal cape, and a sword as congressional Democrats knelt before him. Revolutionaries from 13 British North American colonies fought an 8-year war for independence, waged against Charles' fourth great-grandfather, George III, beginning in 1775. The United States declared independence from Great Britain in 1776, citing the crown for a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all in having direct object with the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. One interesting difference between America and the UK is the people are the sovereign. We do not have one person that's sovereign, Representative Joe Morrell, a Democrat from New York, told Reuters. I don't think the president respectfully understands that difference. Spokespeople from the White House did not immediately respond to requests for comments. In remarks to Congress earlier in the day, Charles commented on the two countries' shared heritage and governing principles invoked in the Magna Carta, the 1689 British Declaration of Rights, and the 1791 U.S. Bill of Rights to declare, quote-unquote, executive power is subject to checks and balances. Another view by Bloomberg News. Report cards send parents wrong signals. Achievement mirage has consequences and hurts disadvantaged students the most. 4 hours ago. Most students in the U.S. aren't proficient in reading or math, but you wouldn't know it by looking at their report cards. 4 out of 5 parents say their children are getting B's or higher. Test scores, meanwhile, have multi-layer lows. According to a one study, 60% of grades don't match standardized assessments. One might hope such a discrepancy would set off alarm bells. Yet surveys show parents are more inclined to trust report cards than test results. The upshot. Not only are measures of student performance diverging, but parents are also looking at the wrong signals. This achievement mirage has serious consequences. Researchers found that when grades are high and test scores are low, parents are less likely to invest in academic support. They'll wait until grades start falling. So while surveys suggest that informed parents are eager to intervene, many don't know how they should be worried. Grade inflation has been seeping through the nation's education system for decades and worsened during the pandemic. Though elite universities have borne the brunt of public criticism for lenient grading in recent years, and the practice has been standard in K-12 classrooms. The trend is similar for English and social studies. Now, test or grading policies can fully capture a student's strengths, but parents shouldn't be blind to their kids' weaknesses. Only a clear diagnosis can remedy what ails American education. Thank you for listening today for part two of the Pantograph. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and until next time, friends, have a wonderful day.